going to pass now to Cheryl. Did you have anything to say on this?
On traditional publishing?
Yes, I did lead into the next
one. Oh, okay. And actually, I wanted to maybe ask Kathleen what you think about.
Well, I just want to lead with what you were saying about people only read three chapters of the book. So when I wrote my second marketing book for speakers called The Six-Figure Speaker, I was talking to W. Mitchell, who's one of the biggest speakers in the world, and I asked him if he'd do a testimonial or a blurb for my book. And what happens these days, people don't want to read your whole book to do a testimonial, but you want a testimonial on your book before you send your manuscript out. You really want a big name, if possible, to write a blurb, especially for nonfiction. I don't know if it's so important for fiction. So I asked Mitchell on the phone, I said, would you write a testimonial for my book, thinking he'd say what most of the speakers said. Send me three chapters and an outline, and I'd be happy to, because they don't want to embarrass themselves, right? They need to know it's a legitimate book, especially Americans, because sometimes it's kind of fluff. And so anyway, he started quoting me a testimonial. So I'm writing down, that's all he knew, the name of the book, and that was it, and he gave me a testimonial. So kind of funny how that works. But when you're sending it out for remarks by other people, all you want to do is send out two or three chapters and an outline, and here's where I'm going with this book, right? Especially in nonfiction. So my first book was self-published. It totally bombed. It got locked up in the distributing house because the publisher went broke, or the printer went broke, and the publishing, the distribution channel got locked up. And so there it was. Like, it deteriorates every day. Really, your equity in your book goes down the minute it lands in your doorstep. It does, right? You've got a very small window to get it out there because you've got a publishing date on it, right? So we'd always stretch my publishing date. If it was October, 99, we'd say 2000. Well, of course we would, right? So so that's one thing. And so the first one was a learning experience, let me say that. And it was a marketing book, funnily enough, strangely enough. So anyway, the second book was about loyalists. Well, what am I going to do with that? I mean, I have no way to distribute it. Distribution is the biggest issue in Canada. Distribution is a mess. A mess. So I couldn't distribute that. What do I know about that? I'm not a historian. And so it was part of Amazing Stories series. So anyway, this publisher, Altitude Press, said, oh, we're looking for little history stories in Canada. I said, So I sent a one paragraph query. I wasn't prepared to take 6 months, which we did with the first book, a marketing book. We wrote a perfect query. And they said, oh, there's no market for speakers. And that was in 1999. And they were right for that moment, but they weren't able to see the future. It's a massive market. So anyway, loyalists, I wasn't prepared to spend months doing stupid queries. So I sent them a paragraph, and that was it. And they sent me a small advance, which my bank account slurped right up. And that was that. And then I wrote another book, and I thought, never again, I'm going to self-publish. And so I wrote a whole chapter on why you should self-publish, because you have control over it. And then I had a publisher knock on my door and say, oh, we're interested, a U.S. publisher. I said, yeah, okay, give me a minute. delete, modify, send it off to him, and he published it. So here's the thing. He published it, but in the end, he didn't get it in U.S. bookstores. I don't know why. Maybe because I'm Canadian. I don't know why. Didn't get it in U.S. bookstores and couldn't get it in Canadian bookstores. He paid a couple of people to distribute it. It just totally didn't work. And so basically, really, all I can say is, hey, I've got a publisher in Oregon, which is worth something to you, frankly, in terms of your branding. But aside from that, I mean, what was that worth? In Altitude Publishing, they got so many grants from the government, and they really overstretched themselves, and they went out of business. So there they are. However, The book about my loyalist surfaced again because Digby named a ferry after her just a couple of months ago. So things never happen the way you think they will. So from now on, I think I'll stick to self-publishing.
I'm just going to get some to drink.
Yeah, actually, if you could get me a cup too,
vodka.
That would be great. No. I had experience of both self-publishing and being published. When I was 24, I got a book published, and it was done by a small press, a radical press. The deal was that I wasn't doing it for profit, so I had no money coming from it, but I did it. I was happy to have it published, and they did a wonderful, wonderful job around distribution. They organized a cross-Canadian book tour for me, and they did all the editing, they did everything. I mean, it was wonderful, and I had no idea when they did it how much they were doing for me until I decided to self-publish. And just an aside, even though I never got any money from that book in terms of royalties, I got, there's a program with the Canadian government, which is the PLR program, Public Lending Rights Program. And quite a number of years, I got $400 or $500 a year because it was in 9 out of 10 libraries. So I actually made some money from that book. When I got to self-publishing, I heard all the stuff, oh, you make lots of money and you know it's so easy and all that. I wrote the book, I thought that's hard. And then I had to do this whole learning process of all the other things. I had to get it edited. I had to decide about the cover and the design and all that. And I did my best. And it took tons and tons of time that I had no idea about. Like, it takes a long time to do those other parts, to really proofread it till it's perfect. Although you never actually probably get it to it's perfect. You're always finding an error after that. So it's like, now I would say a little bit like Kathleen. The next book that I work on, I'm not sure whether I want to self-publish it or have it published by somebody else. Kind of depend, and I'll do some looking around. Certainly I would look for something where it was a bit of a hybrid situation where I really, right very early on in the process, involved real experts and people who I knew in the editing and the proofreading and the actual design. And I found out all about that later. In fact, I met Cheryl later. So my next question is to Cheryl. What are the, and we started to get into this, is what are the advantages and challenges of self-publishing?
Since I'm the only one speaking on this, I was wondering if you could also do the next question.
Yes.
What about hybrid solutions, which might combine the best of both, that is traditional publishing as well as self-publishing. Okay, and we can all speak to that.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I would just like to say, as far as self-publishing is concerned, it's not the bad word anymore in the world of publishing. It used to be when you said you're a self-published author, everybody they had strange looks on their faces. That's not the case anymore. And I found that out myself. I have over 30 years experience in the publishing industry, longer if you figure in the fact that I started a high school newspaper, and we did it with the cyclostyling machine. So, and I really enjoyed it, and little did I know that I would eventually get into publishing itself. So I've done editing, proofreading. I started off as a proofreader, and editing, design, and layouts, and then I also started my own publishing company. I've been writing poetry for about 20 years, and then I sent my manuscript, which I was sitting on for about 10 years, I sent it to a traditional publisher in Oakville, and he turned it down, and I asked why, he didn't really get into it. I came into Canada in 1988, and I published this in 2008, and that was a different time when, there was not so much ethnic literature out there, and the voice and the language and the terminology or the vocabulary that we were using was a little bit different. Very accepting nowadays. But in those days, and I'm really glad that he turned down my manuscript, because I said, with all my background in publishing, and I even knew desktop publishing, I started a company. I went to business school, started a publishing company, and this was the first book I published. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And today, we're going on the ninth year, and we have 75 books published. Not only mine, but mostly other authors. And we do nonfiction, fiction, mostly poetry. Which traditional publishers, unless you're an established poet, they don't even look at it. So what I wanted to say as far as self-publishing is concerned, the Writers Union of Canada and the League of Canadian Poets used to be the arbiters serious literature in the past. And in 2008, when I took this, published this book, because I owned the company, in our words, the book was turned down by both the Writers Union as well as the League of Canadian Poets, because they wrote very clearly in their rules, no self-published poet book will be entertained for membership. So I called them up and I said, let me send you a copy of the book. I sent both of them, both the organizations, a copy of this book. And the next thing I had the bill, the invoice for membership. So they accepted it. Today, all these years later, I'm on the peer panel for evaluations of self-published authors. And the only criteria they ask for is that it be professionally edited and professionally designed. And so when I get a book and I'm supposed to evaluate it, they either send me a PDF of the book or they send me the actual book. And I'm supposed to just evaluate for professionalism. And it's so sad to see some books that obviously the story was good, but it's riddled with typos. No proofreader ventures. You know, don't trust yourself. Even for my books, I get a proofreader. I get an outside proofreader to do it. I get an editor to give me a review, but also to read the book. Because, you know, you're reading the same stuff again and again, so you're going to miss things. So so I'm supposed to be talking on self-publishing. Anyway, you know, take charge of your, my message to you would be, take charge of your work. Take charge of your manuscript, your work. And whether you should publish or not, you make the ultimate decision. Whoever advises you or critiques your work, look at who is criticizing it. Look at them. If they're qualified to really give you advice, listen to them. But if they're bringing their own agenda into it, then, you know, have the sense to speak to others. Do your research, and really, really put in the effort. I know Katie is very discouraged with self-publishing, but she really, I had a chance to look at her book, and she really worked on that. And so I would say, if you are a writer who doesn't want to get into the professional editing and the proofreading, and if you've just written your book and you want to give it off somewhere and no traditional publisher is taking it, then I would suggest you find a professional self-publisher like myself. But we do the editing, and if you don't mind, I'm just going to hold this up and tell you that these are the steps. There are some flyers at the back. Please take one. Step one is the manuscript compilation. Compile your manuscript. Do everything. Thank you so much. Do everything you have to do. Do a self-edit. Research your genre. Do the courses, whatever you have to do. Write your story out. And do the self-edit, and then the next step is professional editing. If you're writing fiction, or even a non-fiction, work with a writing coach. I know a very good one at the back of the room. work with a writing coach, so that, because you have tunnel vision sometimes, and if you're being honest, you'll be seeing it from one aspect. A reader will be able to read themselves into it, and they won't understand, because they're not following your train of thought. A good writing coach will guide you through that. If you can't afford to get someone, please, I would say, don't go to just about anybody. Don't go to your English teacher and ask them to edit your book. Because they will look at language. You need if you're seriously thinking of approaching a traditional publisher, then you need to have a story editor. You need to who will look to structure. You also need a general editor that will look for a storyline. And not so these days, because with print on demand, you can upload, you can make the corrections and upload a new PDF. Sorry, I'm taking a lot of time, I know. But professional proofreading. I was a born proofreader, and really, you know what? You have to be a good proofreader, you have to be a nitpicker. And sometimes errors just jump out at you. And if the more you read your own work, the less likely you are to pass over the same mistakes again and again. So get a good proofreader. Professional design. There are so many desktop designers out there. I know a lot of people like CreateSpace. Amazon's say CreateSpace, so they have the templates, and you slot your Word document into it, and you create your own book. But make sure that you do your research, because I have seen people use CreateSpace, and they make errors like the page number is on the right hand side of each of the pages, and so on the left hand side of the page, the page numbers, and it bothers me so much to read a book like that. Do your research. It's very easy to say, and you have to make mistakes. You almost have to make mistakes. I'm sorry, I'm taking a lot of your time, but this I can go on and on for this. But don't give up. Don't give up when you make a mistake. Just learn from it. Laugh at yourself or whatever. But the next book is going to be different. And don't give up, Katie. She has a lot of really good things to say.
Thank you.
Well, I'm conscious, I think, yeah, the time's going so quickly, and I won't be able to get to all my questions, but I did want to ask one question to you. Before we open it up for the audience, and also just have a quick break where you can get we'll have a quick break where you can get a juice and enter the raffle, and we'll, at the end of the break, we'll do the raffle. But I'm going to go through all these questions. I knew it was overambitious, but I still wanted it. There's so many things involved. I wanted to, because Sarah is here, I wanted to ask her about tips for video helping in building your platform and getting your book out, and whether there were any tips about using book trailers and video as book promotion tools. So we'll get this. It's a little bit ahead of all the things, but I would personally really like to know it.
And it actually isn't ahead of all this stuff, because it's never too early to let people know you're working on something.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say the first mistake that I see authors make is they wait until they have a book to start telling people that they have a book. And, you know, video is, you know, YouTube is the second largest search engine after Google right now, so video is very, very important. And it's a great way to build your own press, your own publicity, your own marketing. And what I see a lot of people do is they wait until that book is ready, and then they go, oh my gosh, I gotta get on camera and I need to tell people about it. And they're really awkward and uncomfortable and scared. And they put the video camera on and they're like a deer caught in the headlights. And they wait till it's really important to make videos before they start to try to make videos. And then they're like, where do I put my lights? And they're freaking out. They don't know. It just all falls apart. And they go, I can't do this. And then they're like, I'm just going to write about it on Facebook. You know. But it's never too early to start, first of all, getting comfortable on camera. And even the biggest wallflower can get comfortable on camera. I'm a natural introvert. I love nature and hibernating. My friends will tell you I hibernate like crazy. And that's kind of a thing, is I'll put myself out there and then I hibernate and I create and then I put myself out there and then I'm like, oh, people. So the first stage really does come from putting yourself on camera and practicing. Literally picking up your phone. I mean, we all have a camera in our pockets these days. You pick it up and you don't do a live stream. This is just for you. Talk about your breakfast, what you had for dinner. Talk about, show your dog, you know, hey, here's my dog, woo, go for a walk, hey, I love my city. You just make practice videos so that you go from being terrified to terrific, essentially. And it happens, I see it happen time and time again. Again, there's no such thing as someone who can't be good on camera and shine on camera and be authentically you and really bring your personality out. What does get in the way is resistance. So if you're too afraid to actually dive in, to allow yourself to suck at the beginning, because you will suck at the beginning, and you may suck for a little while, but if you keep at it, you will get better. And like even for me, like I started all this journey into being an artist as an actor, and I went to theater school in New York, and the first time I ever did an acting scene was completely inhuman, because I was this really self-conscious, really green, and I didn't want to be up in front of people, and there I was pursuing acting. I was supposed to do this scene with this guy, and I was walking in, he caught me cheating or something like that, and I opened the door, and because I'm also a writer, I had this whole scenario in my head of what I was walking into, so I built the house in my head. It was just a classroom, but I built the stairways, so I'm walking in, and I'm going through the door that's not there. I'm like, you know, miming my way through a hallway, and my acting teacher's like, Sarah, what are you doing? Like, I'm sneaking in. He's like, go outside again. I'm like, ugh. So out I went again, and again I do that. I'm like, sneak, sneak, sneak. And he stopped me cold. He's like, get outside. So I went outside again, and he moved my fellow actor right in front of the door. Like, so when I opened it, he was right there, so I couldn't sneak anywhere. So, you know, and then, but I worked through that and realized I was just being self-conscious, and I was, you know, not just using myself. I was getting intellectual. What I did was I got intellectual. So a lot of people, when they first get started making videos, they'll intellectualize their way out of it, you know, because they think they have to be perfect. And I know that was certainly for me, it was a big thing. I wanted to get it right. And so I had this idea of what right was, but really I just had to do me. I just had to be honest and authentic in the moment, you know? And it's the exact same thing with authors. And I know, I'm sure there's more than one introvert in the house. And one thing that's good about making videos is you can make a video and you put it out there and you don't have to, it's not like being in front of a room, like a live room with real people. So you have full control over it. And you can do it in the privacy of your own house, make all your mistakes, and suck as long as you need to. And then when you're ready, you can put it out there, and it's not to a room of people, it's just a click. You know, it's a great way to engage many people without having to actually engage many people. So the first stage really is that practice stage, and to get over that fear. And you know, that fear does come from this perfectionism. It can come from feeling like you have to be something other than you are in front of the camera, or that what you are in front of the camera isn't interesting enough. You know, like, well, I should be like Jay Leno. No, you don't have to be like Jay Leno. You just have to be like yourself. So having said that, that's your first step. And I recommend you start doing that tonight, is to start making those practice videos, because you will want to talk about your book. And there's different ways that you can promote yourself with video. You can start with, hey, I've got this great idea. Make a video and tell people, I've got this idea. I'm right, you know, I don't know. I think it could be a book. What do you think? Oh, that would be great. Yeah, I can't wait to read it. So you're building excitement for it. You can talk about your process along the way. You can talk about when you're feeling like, oh, I've got writer's block. I don't know what's going on. You can bring them into your story so they are part of your journey. You're not just alone writing with your computer or your notepad or typewriter. You actually are co-creating it with people. You know, and you can say, hey, I'm thinking about names for the character, and what do you think of these names? There's a lot of different things you can do with video, and bring them in and get them, even strangers, to know more about your personality so that you are somebody when they want to buy your book, you know? So that's one way that you can start today is, you know, start just talking about what you're doing. Talk about what's your favorite word, what's your favorite book. What's your big inspiration? Why are you writing this story? There's so many different types of topics you can talk about in doing these little videos that you can put out on Twitter, put out on Facebook and Instagram and all those fun places. And there's the other thing that people do is book trailers. And they are not all created equal. So if you think of a book trailer, like a movie trailer, you know, and it's like, out in outer space is blah, 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 and then the aliens come and you see, like, stuff happening. So a book trailer is essentially the same type of idea, but don't get the guy with the low voice, like, don't do that. And they are, as I said, they're not all created equal, but I think a good book trailer kind of feels like a movie. You tell a little bit of the story, and there's little tricks that you can use, like, if you say, for example, like, because a book, you want people to use their imagination to see the characters. Right, you give a description, but for each person will be a little bit different. So when you're doing your trailer, you can have an image of somebody and you don't see their face. You know, that can be from behind, it could be a hand, it can be a gesture, you know. There's any number of ways that you can show elements of your story that will be exciting for people, mysterious, and build hype for what you're doing. A lot of kids' books will use, little, like if there's animation, like, you know, cartoons or drawings, they'll use little bits of that and put that in the trailer, you know, and show what the experience is like to write that book. So when it comes to that type of thing, like to do a book trailer, I would recommend you consider finding more of the professional type of person to do it. So this isn't like you're using your phone and you're, you know, somebody's running and you're only showing their feet. Like, don't do that. Hire somebody who can beautifully, because you've put, you know, possibly years into writing your book. So you might as well advertise it in a way that doesn't look cheap. You know, it doesn't look like it's a rushed job because you poured your heart into it. Yeah, and I think it's a great way, like if you want to check out resources, like to see what book trailers look like, and you can see the good, bad, and the ugly, I would recommend that you go to YouTube and then check out the publishers, like publishers you're eyeing, publishers that you love. Go to their YouTube channel, and you will find book trailers there. You'll also find chats with authors, so you can get ideas of things to talk about in your videos. It's a great resource. But it's very important. I'd say video is becoming quickly the language of today,
yeah,
and language of the future increasingly. You know, soon we won't even look at each, you know, talk to each other. We'll just, I don't know, make selfies all the time. But, yeah, very, very important. And start today.
Yeah.
Because if you wait, I see this time and time again of people who have some big thing that they're promoting, and then they put themselves on camera for the first time, and they suck, and they're terrible, and they're terrified, and they maybe spent thousands of dollars to make it happen, and they have no one to blame but themselves because they didn't start right now, you know? So your video journey, I think, is a great way. It's in your hands. You talk about self-publishing. It's in your hands to show how beautiful your work is and to tell your story, to tell your, like, to make it personal for people. Because people love to hear the behind the scenes of writers and creative people and how your mind works, how you created something, you know? So I encourage it. Do some videos. There you go. Yeah, make some videos and start with these practice videos today, okay? All right, I'm holding you guys to it. I don't want to see you in 3 years going, Sarah, I just tried to make my first video because my book just got published and I sucked. Don't do that. Okay, I don't want to see you come running to me. All right?
Yay. What amazing ideas. Just a case in point. I started, I think, about 7 years ago with my when my son was about this high, and I knew I should be doing video for my business. And I did a course, and I did one video, and I did a video with him, and we burst out laughing, and it sucked. It was really funny, actually, looking at it again. And then I did nothing for 7 years or so. Then I got on a challenge, which was a Facebook Live challenge. And actually, Kathy helped me with that. And every day, I just committed myself to doing a video every day with tips on book writing. And I mean, it's all this, oh, what am I going to look, you know, what do I look like? Am I too fat? Am I too thin? Am I too old? All these things come up. And also then, am I going to stumble? Of course, I stumble all the time. And what's going to happen? And so but I did it. And it's like with writing, day after day after day. And the funny thing is, like, even after the first or second one, I actually started to enjoy it. I could not envision that. It was a lot of fun. And what was amazing to me is it's not just hype that video really gets people's attention. More people commented on my Facebook page than I've had in all the time I've been on Facebook. There was more engagement. And so I really do think, you know, get over, you know, someday I'll be, you know, I've lost 30 pounds or, you know, I'll look younger. That doesn't happen. And just do it now. And people like that kind of realness. They don't want all these Barbie dolls and
everything.
That's
really true. It's true for speakers, too.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Sure. And then, please.
So what I would like to add on to that is actually picking up from what you said about, you know, like the worries about your age or your size and things like that. I see that all the time with my people. And I actually just ran this this mini course, and there was a woman in the course who was convinced she wouldn't be able to do this. And she was a woman who was maybe about 55 years old, and her first video that I had her do, she was standing probably about 20 feet away from the camera. And she said, "This is where I'm really comfortable. I really feel great this far away." And then she walked up to the camera, and you could see her wrinkles, you could see her gray hairs, you could see maybe her shirt wasn't fitting the way it should. And she said, "This is where I'm really uncomfortable. I don't like it here, I wanna be far away." So I see this video, I said, "All right, honey, be uncomfortable. I absolutely double dog dare you to be uncomfortable for the next 7 days. Every single video that you post here, you are right up in the face of that camera." And she accepted the challenge. And after a couple days of being kind to herself, because part of the process that I work with people through is positive reinforcement, you know? So when she would post a video, we cheer her on. "It's wonderful to see you. I love your face. You're amazing. Your energy is infectious. I love your laugh." So you start picking up on what actually matters, And people, when they're watching, like the videos that you guys want to make, we're not talking about a Rihanna music video where she has to look like so-and-so and be wearing the thing and she has to work out for 5 weeks before she shoots the video. We're talking about people who want to engage at an emotional level, who want to be moved by you, who want to connect with you. And being human is the number one way to do that. Yeah. And yes, and you know, the students that I work with, consistently, after they start making videos and they get positive reinforcement on it, they go, wow, I am kind of great. Look at me, I'm gonna get so close, I'm gonna bump my head onto the onto the camera lens, you know? So if you're sitting there and you're thinking, I don't know, I'm not really, I have a great face for radio, you know, I will say you also have a great face for video.